Hi, this is John Harcher, and welcome to episode 41 of Keep On Grooving. We will be doing the Royal Albert Hall concerts this time out, as promised, but I'm going to break things up a little differently than I originally intended. Episode 41, the 1969 European Tour, February at Royal Albert Hall and the March Jams. Yeah, I know, I said we'd do everything this time out, but I was having a little back and forth with our resident Jack Webb, Mark 7, and it seemed like a better idea to tackle the concerts themselves in one episode and the whole legal fallout in another. This way I can take us up to the Experience New York recording sessions in April and break right before then. Those are a separate entity apart from what was going on here. So next time I'll go into as much as I can put together regarding all the legal squabbles, where the tracks turned up officially and unofficially, and what the new version of the film consisted of. I was thinking about doing the March Jams next month, but there's not that much of it. Plus, it goes together with the jamming Jimmy was doing before the Royal Albert Hall concert, so it sort of brings it all full circle. So the band was done with the first part of their European tour. It went relatively well from what we heard last month. It was right around this time the idea of building a studio down in the village started to pick up steam. Again, I'm going to hold off going into a lot of detail on this until we get the box set. Yes, I'm confident we will get it someday. The short version is the Generations Club on West 8th Street was closing, so Hendrix and Mike Jeffrey thought about taking the club over and maybe putting a studio in the back. Two people persuaded them otherwise. First was Eddie Kramer. When asked what he thought about the club studio idea, his reaction was, "You guys are nuts!" He thought it was a better idea to go all in on the studio and make it a top-notch facility. He was backed up by Generations manager Jim Maron, not the one from MST3K, Richard Basehart. He said to open a club in that part of the city, they'd need to clear it with certain people whose names likely end in vowels. Way to put it nicely. Their architect was busy on plans for the club and studio when he got the word towards the end of February, just do the studio. So he started over. Not fun. In the downtime between the January dates and the Royal Albert Hall shows, Jimmy headed back to the States for a bit. Looking for something to do, he ended up pitching in to help out his old friend Buddy Miles and his new band, the Buddy Miles Express. Jimmy had written the liner notes to their first album, Expressway to Your Skull, released at the end of 1968. The first lineup of the band included Herbie Rich on keyboards and Virgil Gonsalves on flute, both of whom joined Jimmy on stage during the run at Winterland in October 1968. This time, a number of the band members had changed, including Dwayne Hitchings on organ. But the core remained the same of Buddy Miles on drums and vocals, bassist Billy Rich, and guitarist Jim McCarty. Jimmy produced the sessions on February 11th, which included two tracks that make the album, sort of. 69 Freedom Special and I Can See. McCarty wrote the first, a funky little instrumental, but supposedly Jimmy came up with the name, referring to Billy Rich's army tenure, which his management was trying to keep as short as possible. I Can See starts off with a riff on Soulfinger, then goes off on his own as Buddy bemoans his girl won't treat him right. Somewhere along the way, by the time the album was released, the song's title had changed to Destructive Love and a different recording was used for the album. Once the official sessions were done, it was time to jam. On one, Jimmy played bass while Buddy played guitar. Now, there's a photo floating around out there of Buddy joining the Experience on stage for a jam with him on guitar, so it's not unheard of. Then the band did two widely circulated songs centering around the interplay of Jimmy and Dwayne Hitchings' keyboards, one of which received an official release, and the other still hasn't. The one that's still in the vaults, even though it's out there, is a 9-minute jam called World Traveler. It's mostly an instrumental with a verse and a chorus thrown there in the middle. It's obviously just a workout with Jimmy trying different ideas and Hitching adding some very fine organ fills along the way. Would be nice if this made it out officially at some point. The boots are a little muddy, but not too bad. The other one was also booted a long time ago and usually appeared right alongside World Traveler, but it was finally released in full on the Purple Box in 2000. It's too bad. It's very explicitly based on his relationship with his brother Leon, who's had his share of difficulty over the years, a number of them brought on to himself. It's a very tough song, probably one of the most open Jimmy was in his lyrics, comparing it to his own life. For both of these, it doesn't sound like there's anyone on bass, just Buddy backing the other two guys up on drums. All in all, a pretty productive night. They probably could have gotten more accomplished, but Jimmy had to head over to England to get ready for the Royal Albert Hall shows. The band had booked time at Olympic to try to do some rehearsing, maybe try out some new songs, things like that. This was the first time they'd been back there since January of 1968, when Noel walked out of the Along the Watchtower sessions. This time things weren't much better. Noel was bored, Mitch was in and out, and Jimmy was in a bad mood. They were stuck in the smaller studio, and engineer George Tiantits, who'd worked with them on Axis Bold as Love, noticed the difference immediately. He tried to let Jimmy know he should try to keep the volume a little lower compared to the larger studio, but Hendrix insisted on keeping it up. On Valentine's Day, February 14th, the band recorded three songs. One take of each was later released on the 2004 Dagger album, Hear My Music. Slow version, Blues Jam at Olympic, and something they called Midnight Lightning, but in reality was an early embryonic take of Easy Rider, which was medleyed with the Star Spangled Banner. So despite their issues, the band could still make vital music. It was a matter of how long it took. The Experience returned a couple of days later on February 16th and tried recording Slow Version again, we think. Jimmy wouldn't give George a song title for him to write down, but from what everybody says, it sounds like the earlier song. They were joined this time out by Rocky, I'll try to say his name this time, Didzornu. I'm going to hope that's correct. He played congas on a little song by the Rolling Stones called Sympathy for the Devil, so he was used to playing with the big guys. He played along with many of the takes of Slow Version, then just he and Jimmy played a couple of numbers by themselves. The first was a medley of Room Full of Mirrors and It's Too Bad, which Jimmy retitled Shame, Shame, Shame. The second was a number called Crying Blue Rain, which Noel had claimed was his title. As we know, the phrase later turned up in the lyrics to In From the Storm. The full band came back and played a very different arrangement of Loverman, sort of a sped-up shuffle, for lack of a better word, but it showed they could still put a decent recording together. They moved on to do a studio version of Sunshine If You Love and kicked it out in two takes. So despite their troubles, almost all of their recording from this night ended up being released, but not in the exact form as they were recorded. A good take of Slow Version from this night is still in the vaults, but the rest of them came out in 2010. Valleys of Neptune included Loverman, Sunshine If You Love, and Crying Blue Rain, and the West Coast Seattle Boy box set had the Room Full of Mirrors Shame, Shame, Shame medley. However, only Loverman and Sunshine were released as is. For the two songs that just had Jimmy and Rocky, Noel and Mitch came back in 1987 with Chaz Chandler to do their own Alan Douglas imitation and overdub new parts onto those songs. Sure, they were in the band and could have played on those songs back then, but the two of them weren't the same players they were 20 years earlier, so the sound is very different than what it would have been. On the 17th, the band went into the studio and rehearsed songs they'd be playing at the show to make sure they were in good shape, everyone remembered their parts, things like that. You'd think because most of these had been played on the January dates, plus many times before, it wouldn't be an issue, but they were playing it safe. The set, as it were, consisted of Fire, Spanish Castle Magic, Hear My Train A-Comin', I'll Live Today, Loverman, and Red House. Two of these were released on the Purple Box, Spanish Castle Magic and Hear My Train A-Comin'. Two of them on Valleys of Neptune, Fire, and the frustratingly incomplete Red House. He was only half a verse away from finishing it. The other two remain unreleased. Ultimate Hendrix says they were spirited, so they may end up seeing the light of day at some point. So like I said, despite the band's issues, they sounded as good as ever. Now we get to February 18th and the big day, the show that be filmed and recorded for the new project. Chaz Chandler came by to show his support. Everything was ready to go. For the most part, the band just stuck to their usual set, tossed in a couple rarities, but no real surprises. They kicked off with a Becoming Rarer tax-free with the nod to Hanson and Carlson. Jimmy was off to the races, but Mitch and Noel struggled to keep up every now and then. Mitchell even took a drum solo to get himself warmed up and try to get ready, but he still lagged in places. Then, just at one point, Jimmy suddenly decides to bring it all to a halt. Fire was next, a little on the ragged side. Noel didn't pitch in with the "Let me stand it to your fire" part in the chorus that he usually did. And a lot of times they didn't come back in together at the right times. Here My Train of Coming followed, and for some reason Mitch had a hard time getting into the right rhythm. He kept coming down on like the wrong beat for the first minute or so. Jimmy then had to tune his guitar before heading into the verses. But once the solo starts, the song kind of comes together. Foxy Lady started out a little on the perfunctory side, but had a very extended ending. Next was Red House, referred to as being recorded in the Benjamin Franklin Studios. Now, for the UK, this was an old song, having been on their version of Are You Experienced? This one had a very unique and extended intro. And before the verse starts, instead of doing the descending figure, he does it going up the scale. A little different there. He also started doing the solo that had the unique sections in them, like the wah part and then the jazzy part. In fact, the jazz tapping section has a part that sounds like an early version of the intro to Message of Love. The band lost each other a time or two in this one, but it ended very strong. Sunshine of Your Love was its usual workout, but again, with Mitch sort of losing the timing here and there. Spanish Castle Magic was pretty good throughout. It was an extended version. In the middle, it sounded like Jimmy came up with the turnaround for Message of Love. Considering he just started working on an Olympic, it might have been on his mind quite a bit. He also seems to have come up with the Play That Riff. The Star Spangled Banner and Purple Haze was a little bit on the loose side. Voodoo Child was a set closer. Oddly enough, for the last song, it seems the band was the most together they'd been all night. Now, as I mentioned, as far as the set list went, it wasn't all that different from most of the shows they performed in Europe a month earlier. Now, on the performance front, the show was, okay. Some moments were inspired, others were disjointed, to say the least. As you heard me say, it's not like it started out good, went downhill, or started out slow and got better. In the middle of some of the longer songs, they were solid one minute, and then they kind of lost each other the next. Jimmy was definitely looking for different things to do, and sometimes he just lost Noel Mitch along the way. Now, Chaz thought it was practically a disaster. I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but the band was certainly not firing on all cylinders. So on that front, it may not have been the best performance to see or listen to. We'll make that just listen to. The film crew somehow didn't realize you have to have proper lighting when filming a band in a darkened arena, so the footage was practically unusable. I mean, Cream had just done their farewell concert the previous November, and it was filmed. Why didn't they just do what they did? So the next show, 6 days later, took on far more importance than was originally planned. On Saturday the 22nd, the band returned to Olympic, not for more rehearsals, but work on new material. The first was an original called Go My Own Way. No, they didn't cover this in High School Musical. Jimmy tried a couple of takes by himself before Mitch and Noel joined in. Nothing much ever came of this. I'll be honest, I'm not sure if this has ever leaked out at all. Next up was a studio version of Hound Dog, somewhat along the lines of the one they'd done at the BBC back in October of 1967. They were joined by Chris Wood from Traffic, Rocky on percussion, and Jerry Goldstein on piano. Not sure if it's the film producer, Jerry Goldstein, but they ended up doing over 40 takes of it. Wood switched from sax to flute after take 16. Now, Ultimate Hendrix seems to indicate take 19 was the best, but the version that appeared on West Coast Seattle Boy has Wood on sax, so it must be an earlier one. Jimmy then began to work on two songs he continued to develop through the rest of the year. First was an early version of Message to Love. Even at this stage, the song pretty much had the form it would retain once Gypsy Sons and Rainbows and Band of Gypsies performed it. Later, he began work on the song he never got down, Valleys of Neptune. He actually began playing around with the chords on piano, then moved to guitar to do the chord progressions there. Later, he did a song called Gypsy Blood, which ended up being a version of what he intended to be the middle section of Valleys of Neptune. All four of these were included on Hear My Music. On Monday the 24th, it was time to try it again at Royal Albert Hall. Instead of rehearsing at Olympic, the band decided to have an afternoon session right at the arena. He didn't do it often, but several of these sessions are well known on the collector circuit. The Berkeley 1970 rehearsals are very well regarded and highly circulated. Supposedly there was an expansive session for the LA Forum 1969 show, but I don't think anything is officially turned up for it. So this afternoon they started out with Hey Joe, took a number of stabs at Hound Dog, including an extended 4.5 minute jam, took a couple of stabs of Voodoo Child for a minute each. They did Hear My Trainer Coming twice. The first time broke down about halfway through, but the second made it all the way to the end. They do four tries of Room Full of Mirrors. Most of them do a good part of the song. Now, interestingly, right before they start the first time, Jimmy's playing the riff for the Turnaround Before the Bridge, or middle eight, in Easy Rider, so he already had that riff in there. I think that may have been a part of Inside Out as well, but anyway. They finish up with a couple of Bleeding Hearts, one stops after a minute or so, the other going all the way to the end. Then it was on to the show that night. To make sure there were no lighting issues, the crew requested the house lights just be kept up the whole time. This time the set list would again have a lot of similarities with the ones from the European tour, but took a number of different paths. Jimmy decided to open up with Lover Man, which was a concert regular, but remember had not been released on any album and wouldn't until after his death, in this case a solid 4 minute opener. Then he began to stretch things out. He went into what he called a blast from the past, the B-side from his first single, Stone Free. And just as an aside, at either show, he didn't do the A-side, Hey Joe. Guess he leapt at the chance not to do it, but he did do it at the rehearsal, go figure. Now, he'd been doing Stone Free on and off for a little while, but not like this. He turned it into a 12-minute epic, ranging and roving over a lot of ground, including a little drum solo by Mitch. This was the template for the song he used when he did it with the Band of Gypsies at the end of the year. This was followed up by the first of three epic blues numbers he'd do that night, his own tale of being down and out, Getting My Heart Back Together Again, or better known as Hear My Train A-Comin'. This one is usually listed among the top version of all the times he did the song. I'd probably put it somewhere behind Berkeley, Winterland, and Band of Gypsies. It's very good. They follow this with I Don't Live Today, another solid version of a song they've been doing on and off. Then they did their second blues number, Jimmy's Own Red House. As with the previous show, he'd begun to build a solo section into a number of movements. This development would reach its peak later at the LA Forum and probably the ultimate at San Diego, the one that was on in the West. But this one is pretty close to those. Then we get a couple of concert staples from this era, Foxy Lady and Sunshine of Your Love. This was followed by the third of the blues numbers, this time a cover of Elmore James' Bleeding Heart. It was done in a traditional 12-bar blues style, but soon he began to change the arrangement and sped it up, and later funked it up, by the time he recorded it in 1970 for possible use on his next album. Fire was next, another song that had begun to change by the time they'd done it here. The band started to stretch it out by having the solo go up and down a number of times before also extending the call and answer section between Jimmy and Mitch. Little Wing followed. It looked like this was its final live performance. If so, it certainly went out on a high note. This version is regarded as among the best live versions of it, if not the best. Then it was time to close the show with the new closer, Voodoo Child. This is again noted as probably among the best live versions of it, if you ask me, I'd say this specific version served as the model for Pearl Jam's Evenflow. However, when he gets to the end of the song, it doesn't so much end as morph into something else. Rocky joined them on stage, and he was followed by two members of the opening band, a couple of familiar names from Electric Ladyland, Dave Mason and Chris Wood. Now, that opening band was not Traffic. We'll go into what it was in an episode sometime in the spring. They jammed out on the live premiere of the song Jimmy had been working on for the better part of a year, Room Full of Mirrors. This was nothing like the later studio version, more of a loose jam around a groove. After the song ended, the band left the stage, but then returned for an encore. He started to go into Purple Haze, but something sounded off, like it was muffled. It cleared up for a moment, then back into that muffled sound for like the rest of the song. As it ended, Jimmy's guitar started going out of tune, as it often did, but instead of stopping, he went right into Wild Thing. The audience loved hearing it. Wish it would have been in tune. I think Jimmy sensed it because he only did half the song before going into a little of the Star Spangled Banner. After a little bit of that, he decided to give the camera something to film and went about smashing his amps at the end of the set, kind of taking a page out of his label mate's playbook, just without Keith Moon's explosive. All in all, a much better show than the week before, and it looked like it was all gotten on film. Job well done. Before returning to New York, the band did one more session at Olympic. Jimmy worked on Valleys of Neptune, Gypsy Blood a little more. Rocky, Chris Wood, and another horn player joined the band on a number imaginatively titled 12 Bar Blues Jam with Horns. Well, no questioning what this was. The song was later released as a B-side to the single for the Lover Confusion alternate mix that was on West Coast Seattle Boy. Noel also got to do a song, also imaginatively titled Noel's Tune. Two takes of it appeared on his Experience Sessions album, unfortunately released after he passed away. Now, here was where I was going to get into all the legal mess that is the Royal Albert Hall project, but I'm going to hold off until next time so we can go over this bit by bit, plus I can double check on all the issues surrounding it, both the album and the film and all the legal stuff. So let me just clean up this episode with some of the sessions that happened in March, since there's really nowhere else for it to go. First, Jimmy hooked up with the Buddy Miles Express again on a date they still haven't quite got nailed down. They recorded a nearly 13-minute number entitled Blue Window. It was so good, Jimmy had the song mixed and set to go in case they wanted to do something with it, but it sat in the vaults until the Martin Scorsese Blues album in 2003. We know for certain he was in the studio on March 18th, and he was sure busy that day. He started out doing a one-of-a-kind studio version of the Star Spangled Banner. This was no simple melody, but a multi-layer masterwork of production. He had guitars running at all different speeds, going all over the speakers, making all kinds of sounds you never knew a guitar could make. It doesn't look like Jimmy was going to do anything with this, but after his death, Eddie Kramer found it and thought it was too good to stay in a vault, so it ended up on the Rainbow Bridge soundtrack. After that, Buddy Miles and an organ player joined Jimmy to demo a couple of songs. One of them didn't have an official name, so it may be out there in the bootleg world somewhere, but the other one definitely left its mark. It was a demo for the song that would become Hey Baby. At this point, it was called Hey Gypsy Boy, and it was a very low-key but beautifully sung and arranged number. It might have been good enough to release just as it was, were it not for one thing. Jimmy's guitar was out of tune. Not the whole set of strings, just one. But that one was really out. And for some reason, the chord arrangement called for him to hit it at the end of almost every phrase. Now, for a guy who is known as a stickler for perfection, even for a demo, how could he let this go on? He should have started, and as soon as he hit the bad string, he should have cut it short, retune, and start it over. Imagine how it would have sounded with a properly tuned guitar. Now, we first heard it in overdub fashion as the last song on side one of Midnight Lightning. I made the comment when we did that album, Alan should have taken Jimmy's guitar off and just had Jeff Mironoff or Lance Quinn put the acoustic guitar over top of that. The original version came out on People, Hell, and Angels. There's also an alternate version out there in the bootleg world with a different, longer intro. Once they were done, Jimmy welcomed his old buddy Lonnie Youngblood to the studio, and the two of them cut a couple of numbers, Georgia Blues and Let Me Move You. The first one originally came out on the Martin Scorsese Blues album, then again on Both Sides of the Sky. Same version, though there were some slight sound differences, but not mix-wise. The other one came out on People, Hell and Angels. They're both really solid. I hope Experience Hendrix is able to get the rights to the 1966 Youngblood material so it can receive a proper presentation as opposed to those dozens of knockoff albums. If they want to combine it with the rest of the Curtis Knight material, hey, we'll take it. The next day on the 19th, Jimmy cut a bunch of demos by himself, but again, it's like the one number he did with Buddy and the Organist the day before. There's no official titles, so they may be out there on Boots and we just don't know it. A week later, on March 25th, he had two jam sessions with two very different guitarists. The first was with Buddy's guitar player, Jim McCarty, who played with Mitch Ryder before he played with Buddy and later would play with Cactus, as well as Mitch on drums and bassist Dave Holland, who'd played on albums by Miles Davis, Chick Corea, and Herbie Hancock. The 17-plus minute jam is essentially an extended version of Villanova Junction Blues, which Jimmy really hadn't done with anyone yet, so Mitch and Dave were trying to keep up. The odd thing about calling this the Jimmy Jimmy Jam is McCarty is barely heard on it. He wasn't thrilled when an edited version of it came out on Nine to the Universe. The full one came out on Hear My Music. But I guess he didn't have the pull to keep it from being released, or he just decided to let it go. The second guitarist, however, did have enough of an influence to keep his jams from being officially released. In this case, another jazz player, John McLaughlin. Once the other guys were done, Jimmy and John got set up. McLaughlin had his usual hollow-bodied guitar, the kind he'd like to play. However, it had a bad pickup on it that kept cutting in and out. Playing is definitely good, you just can't hear all of it. He's never given the okay for this half-hour session to be officially released, and if you listen to the Boots, you can see, or hear, his point. He's just kind of buried in there. I don't even think the modern AI could extract enough out of it to make it listenable. Oh well. By the beginning of April, the Experience will be back in New York trying out a couple of different studios to get something resembling a complete song done before having to go back out on the road at the end of the month. But at least the film was in the can, and they could get it out for the public to enjoy. Well, didn't quite work out that way. Next time, we'll go over how and where the Royal Albert Hall material either leaked out or was officially released, what caused the delay, and where the heck does everything stand right now. That's next time on Keep On Grooving. Please hit the subscribe button if you like what you're hearing. I'm John Hartog. Thanks for listening.